recorded, but he gives us this report from the Homeless Services Center on June 5th.
Santa Cruz, that was, of course, May the Work I Have Done Speak for Me. That's the Solidarity Singers, although I'm not quite clear who or where they're from. They sing a great song, and we should sing it too. At least we should pay some attention to it and what we do. You're listening to 96.3 FM, Free Radio. I'm Bathrobe's Peter Robert Norris, and this is your Civil Rights Sunday show, 11 to 1:30, and 6 to 8 every Thursdays as well in the evening. If you're not here, you maybe should be hanging out downtown and marching for basic rights for gay people and for gay pride down there if you're into that sort of thing. I think civil rights are something we have to be concerned about everywhere, and hey, over in San Lorenzo Park, that's where folks are going to be marching to, or if they've already reached that point probably by this time. A couple of announcements about what's coming up. Tomorrow there's going to be a Stop the Bombing in Yugoslavia meeting. As we can see, the bombing has not stopped, even though there has been Serbian parliament consent to a NATO surrender, followed by Milosevic's consent. The generals are still dickering. And here I'll make a prediction. I suspect war is going to break out again. Because you have a situation in Albania where you're going to have the reverse thing happening. Albanians are going to be picking up on repressing Serbs, and then you're going to have fights between Albanian militia and the KLA and the NATO forces. I predict difficult times ahead for the occupation force in Yugoslavia, even if the bombing stops. And of course, my concern is that there'd be some different solution than the NATO solution. A couple of comments about the NATO solution. There actually are three differences, or three significant facts that may not have showed up in the mainstream media too clearly. I was able to kind of dig it out from the fingernails of the news stories that I read, the kind of dirt under the fingernails. One of the reasons Milosevic may have accepted this peace accord is because it is different than the agreement that was demanded in March, the Rambouillet Agreement. This agreement, the Rambouillet Agreement, required him to accept troops everywhere in Yugoslavia, passage everywhere throughout the country, whereas this one only requires NATO troops in the Kosovo area. So that's a significant change. A second significant change is the Rambouillet Accords would have required in 3 years a discussion or vote on the issue of Kosovo independence. This has no such requirement. And finally, this is being undertaken supposedly with UN Security Council approval and acknowledgement, and that gives the Russians a chance to play some kind of defensive role, though commentators, if you read them in the papers today and yesterday, are saying that one of the reasons Milosevic surrendered was because it looked like the Russians were telling him to they weren't going to support him in this situation, that they were supporting increased NATO bombing, apparently. They weren't saying they were supporting NATO bombing. They were supporting this settlement or else. So that was another consideration. Just a couple of points that I noticed in the Yugoslavian news today, and I have lots more on the Yugoslavian news. I've got a plethora of stuff to put out. A couple of announcements, as I was saying. Stop the bombing in Yugoslavia, 3:30 p.m. at the Student Center is when the Coalition for Stopping the Bombing in Yugoslavia meets tomorrow up at UCSC. That's Monday, 3:30. And if you want to continue that struggle, that's the place to show up. Then at the town clock, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a picket at 5:15 if the bombing is continuing. And at 6 o'clock, Christopher Crone holds his court kind of at the Pergolesi if you want to discuss what's coming up at the next city council meeting. We have an incoming phone call. Let's see what that's about. That's about a dial tone, it sounds like. We also have some guests who are gearing up to get on the mic here shortly. We all kind of forgot each other, but we had a very interesting conversation with Alicia and Roxanne Akistapache, Beach Flats residents, who have been concerned about the rights of other residents in the Beach Flats and have spoken both to City Council and on radio about this issue before. Let's give them an opportunity to join in the conversation. See if your mic is working and kind of get close to it, Roxanne.
Oh, hello. Hello, hello.
That sounds good. Why don't you get yourself comfortable and just speak wherever you would normally be comfortable speaking.
Is it okay if I hold the mic?
You can hold the mic.
Because I'm having to bend over.
Sure.
Okay. So we're going to talk about the Beach Flats?
We are indeed going to talk about the Beach Flats. And Let me see how we're doing. Speak into the mic.
Hi.
That sounds good. Roxanne, how long have you lived in the Beach Flats?
This is my fourth year.
And there have been some concerns, as you know, the last city council election turned, I think, to a large extent on, well, the new candidates got into power, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, on sort of a rejection of the Rotkin-Kennedy plan or the Steinau-Quartararo-Walton plan to expand the Beach Boardwalk, realign 3rd Street, and set up a commercial development there. You opposed that at that time. Why was that?
Well, we opposed the beach area plan because it would make so many people homeless. A total of probably 500 people minimum and up to 800 people maximum. And the only reason for it was to make things plush for Charles Canfield. That was the main issue.
Charles Canfield is, of course, the man who owns the Seaside Company and the Beach
Boardwalk. It was actually to turn more and more residential property into commercial property. And no one in the Beach Area Working Group or in the tenant-landlord group for the Beach Flats was against affordable housing. It's just that the affordable housing was going to be put up in lieu of making people homeless. We didn't feel that you make 25 people homeless and put up 35 units. That wasn't an acceptable margin of success, you know.
And there was also, I guess, some concern that the affordable housing wouldn't really be affordable for the people being evicted, right?
Most people would not qualify. You had to have clean credit references to get in there. You had to, although many poor people do not have clean credit records, they often pay their rent on time and food, the things that come first. And, you know, the doctor bills and things have to come last. It will mess up your credit, but it doesn't mean that you won't pay your rent. Also, if you had any kind of problem, if you'd been in jail or incarcerated, you know, it didn't matter. Particularly if it was for shoplifting or whatever, you couldn't have a record. And so there are just a lot of things that poor people, as you know, have higher jail records
mm-hmm.
than people of...
Particularly poor people of color, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So anyway...
And this is a Hispanic area, right? Most people are Spanish-speaking in this area?
No, it's a 50-50 area.
Thank you.
But our local government likes to concentrate on it as if it were Latinos only. It makes it look as if they're doing a lot for poor people of color. But in all actuality, we know from distributing flyers for months before the election and all during the beach area plan controversy that our neighborhood is, in fact, darn near 50-50
mm-hmm.
in terms of English-speaking opposes, you know, Spanish-speaking. And that's the whole you know, it's a divisive thing to separate the people, the neighbors from each other, too, is to only talk to Hispanic neighbors as they're doing now with this Dolphin Lee project and not include the white neighbors, to take all of their input from one group or the other. There's always been a divisiveness to separate landlords and tenants, white people from Latinos. A divide and conquer tactic has always been taken. So now we have people in our neighborhood again over this Dolphin Lee project.
What is the Dolphin Lee project for those who don't know?
For those who don't know, there's no such thing according to our city councilman. But in fact, Tim Fitzmaurice from the city council has been going door to door at the Dolphin, which is a large housing complex that now they're looking at as another opportunity site to knock down many dwellings and put up a project. And interestingly enough, the people who would be displaced in this project are all of the organized Latinos that organized against the beach area plan, that made their voices heard, that wrote letters, that came to city council meetings. And they are the ones now who will lose their homes. We know from past projects such as Neary Lagoon and Sycamore that beach flats people very rarely, percentage-wise, make it into those projects. Sycamore was supposed to be for the beach flats area mainly, to send people to better housing.
You're talking about past housing projects
yeah,
by the
past housing projects.
Community Housing Corporation?
Mm-hmm, done by Mercy and,
Mercy
you know.
Housing, which is also apparently the person that is, the group that is being chosen for this Dolphin Lee project.
Well, the thing about the Dolphin Lee project is that the people that own the building do not want to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
It would be eminent domain once again, just like the old plan.
Explain to us what that is.
It just means that the city needs your property, and they come in, and supposedly they pay you fair market value, and you have no choices in it. Now, we have a lot of property standing empty, residential property in our neighborhood that was bought up because the boardwalk was so sure that the first beach area plan or the last beach area plan was going to go through. They bought up property and they emptied it of people, because they were looking for that property to be turned into commercial zoning, which now it will not be. And they've never filled it again. They're either using it as a tax write-off, or they have other plans, or they know that our new councilmen are weak and eventually they're going to get what they want. I don't exactly know what's going on. But there's all kinds of land that could be eminent domain, rehabilitated, where people could go back and live on it. No one would lose housing. It would actually increase housing stock by 100%, whatever they did.
So the current plan, the current proposal that the city council, some city council members say doesn't exist, that Skip Spitzer, coordinator, co-chair of SCAN, says SCAN hasn't endorsed, he claims. This plan is to essentially evict, 200 people from Dolphin and Lee apartment complex?
You know, I'm not sure the number. I asked Phil Baer to call in because he has all the statistics. And he will do that if he can pull the station in.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not exactly sure. I did bring some, but I'm not sure how many exactly. But
mm-hmm.
It's at least that many.
At least 200 people. They'll be evicted, and they'll presumably be paid relocation funds for a period of time. But the question will arise, will they be able to find the housing that they have now in the Dolphin and Lee apartment complexes, which I presume is relatively inexpensive?
Yes, comparatively for the whole city of Santa Cruz, it is. And they have, you know, they can have all their children with them. They can have their auntie.
In the Dolphin Lee project.
Yeah, live
but
with
not
them.
Necessarily in the other projects.
Right. In the projects, there's all these limits on, you know, if you have so many children, you have to rent a four-bedroom house, let's say, if you are apartment. I mean, there's all these rules around it. The past projects that they have even been interested in wouldn't even house most of the families that we have in the beach club. I mean, a family that has six children, if you're going to do mainly two- and three-bedroom apartments in a project, and the rules are they have to have four or five, then you can't house them anyway.
Hmm.
You know, obviously.
Now, so the current proposal is, who's pushing this plan? Mercy Housing would be essentially the property, the current Dolphin Lee, people would be evicted, the property would be eminent domain, and the buildings would be torn down, and then a new buildings would be built on the same property, which would presumably be more expensive to live in, is that right?
Well, they're supposed to be low income housing. Now, if you can rent an apartment for $800 a month and have two families share it, no one is opposed to that, then that's affordable for you. If, in fact, you must pay, say, $600 a month for something that would normally cost $1,200, that might be a savings to someone else. But if you can't have the other family with you that kicks in part of the rent, your rent has actually now gone up.
And you're suggesting that the Dolphin Lee project, once it's, would involve kind of management that would have those kinds of problems for the people who are currently living in the property.
Definitely. And, you know, we live in a neighborhood, we live in a real live and let live neighborhood. And by that I mean that if my next door neighbors have an aunt and uncle come to live with them, it doesn't bother me. It has nothing to do with me. And I don't watch to see what my neighbors are doing. They don't watch to see what I'm doing. And their landlords don't really, some landlords make people sign an agreement that says you can't have people, but by and large, most of the landlords, as long as you keep your property neat and clean and take care of things, don't mind. So when you move into a building that's full of rules, where you can put flower pots, whether your auntie and uncle can stay more than 24 hours without written permission or whatever. It's a whole different lifestyle that I think most people, I mean, yes, they would have a brand new bathroom, but I don't think they would really want to live that way.
And this does primarily involve Hispanic people, right? We are talking, Dolphin Lee is
Dolphin right. Lee is, I think it's totally Hispanic.
And it's Hispanic activists who opposed the
beach
boardwalk bulldozing.
And the interesting thing was, when they came to speak at the city council meetings, Councilman Hernandez, Rodkin, basically told them to sit down or discredited everything they said, saying, well, I don't even know why you're here, because there's nothing planned for your building.
This was at the town meeting about 3 weeks ago at the Civic Auditorium.
No. This was during the beach area, the last plan, during when people came out in numbers.
This was last fall you're
talking
about.
Last fall. Now, these same people came out again to the town meeting.
3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago. And basically, none of us really, they didn't get around to calling us to even speak, because how they ended the oral communications on Dolphin Lee was, they didn't know what we were talking about. There is no Dolphin Lee. This is always coming out of Tim Fitzmaurice's mouth. And it did it at the community meeting in the trailer, even though that's what we were there to discuss, that there is no plan. It's absolutely ridiculous. It makes no sense. One of the things that is of great concern to me is the way people feel that they can sort of occupy our neighborhood. And our neighborhood has been under government occupation now for over 2 years. We've had a zoning inspector on everyone's property for 2 years. We've had people going in and out of houses. We've had city councilmen making people feel intimidated who don't speak English, asking to be let into their house, to see their house. This has been going on for a long time. I put a lock on my gate, and now no one can come to my door. I got tired of government people in hard hats, people in suits, people with clipboards walking around, looking at our cars, looking over the fence at our flowers, talking about us as if we weren't there. Now, Tim Fitzmaurice is coming in with 3 or 4 UCSC students into our neighborhood, going door to door, hoping to do you want me to put the headphones on, or? Okay, hang on a minute, I got sidetracked here.
Okay, now actually, joining us now is Jane Baer, who has been working, hello? She was joining us. I think we have to call her again. But joining us is going to be Jane Baer of the Beach. Give me the name of their organization, Roxanne. I always get it wrong. They're the Beach Residents Association or Beach Flats Residents Association. Or?
You know what? I'm going blank. I'm having a senior moment.
Uh-oh.
But I'll fill you in just a second. Boy, I don't know what's the matter with me. Beach Flats Neighborhood Association.
There we go.
Boy.
You are on the air with Roxana Kistapachi, and we're talking, if I'm not mistaken, to Jane Baer.
Yeah. I'm sorry that something happened to the phone.
No problem. Now, you may have a little problem hearing Roxana if you haven't got a radio, so I'm going to have to kind of transmit what she says to you.
Fine.
But, Jane, you have recently proposed, I mean, some of the criticism is, oh, you folks are just opposing this Dolphin Lee project without any kind of positive alternatives. You don't like affordable housing. You're a bunch of slumlords down there who just, trying to stand in the way of progress. You hate Charlie Canfield, et cetera, et cetera. But in fact, haven't you recently proposed and sort of outlined a whole series of alternatives for the community, a project for affordable housing that will actually increase the housing stock, not involve relocation fees, and will actually expand the opportunities for people there. And you have a particular name for this project, I believe.
Yes, that's right. It's called Rex Court, and it's the combination of the two properties, Rex Villa and Walker Court, and they are two of the recently emptied properties that Seaside Company, which owns the boardwalk, has purchased. And evicted the tenants, and now they just sit empty, and so we'd like to start with those with those empty apartments, complexes, and have the seed money from the city, or the city just offer to buy them, or the city use eminent domain to actually force the sale of these two properties to begin the recovery.
Let me ask you, how many units are we speaking of, and also who owns them right now?
The Seaside Company owns them right now, and it's 19 units.
And are these units occupied, or are they units that were bought up presumably for speculation when Charlie felt he had a locked grip on the city council and could count on a commercial redevelopment plan?
The latter. And let me give an overview, if I might. The Seaside Company has, in the last 10 to 15 years, starting at the part of our residential neighborhood, beachfronts, that's closest to the boardwalk amusement park, they have proceeded to buy up homes and apartment complexes and empty them out and demolish them. They wait the 2 years so they don't have to do the replacement housing, and they use the 30-day eviction often that can empty an apartment without any reason. So there has been this modus operandi of buying, emptying, and demolishing. And it's just proceeded up, house after house.
How many people would you say have suffered this consequence?
Oh my gosh, 500.
And how many people actually got some kind of relocation funds?
None, zero.
I see.
So we're talking about the earliest one was in 1979, and that kind of set the pace. But it's been going more and more rapidly, and in the past 2 to 3 years, it's at an ever increased speed. And in fact, during the recent beach area plan, the redevelopment agency director, Sil Cirillo, actually told the Seaside Company to buy 7 single-family houses that they could use as trade-in as part of the 3rd Street realignment.
Wait a minute. You're saying that a city employee and a city agency gave inside information to a private developer, Charlie Canfield, in order for speculative purposes?
That's correct.
You're prepared to make this charge publicly? This is a serious allegation, you know.
Well, I didn't hear it firsthand. It was a realtor named Norma Tasker, who was on the beach area working group, who decided that she just wanted to find out herself as a private citizen what exactly was going on. So she made an appointment with Sil Cirillo and asked her what's going on there around the beach area with this plan. And Sil Cirillo just stated it that way. Norma Tasker said that that Sil Cirillo just stated it to her in more or less the way I said. I did not personally, it's not presented secondhand, mm-hmm. but it's commonly felt that the boardwalk's intention to buy the neighborhood residential properties and empty them and demolish them is known by everyone in Santa Cruz. It's certainly known by everyone in the beach area, and it's coming as somewhat of a surprise to me that it is not well known by the general populace. Because
let me ask you this, Jane. This Rex Court plan that you're proposing, is this how much is this going to cost? I mean, you'll have to buy from Canfield at market rate his housing, right? Why can't he? How would the cost for this compare with the cost for the Dolphin Lee project?
Well, since there's no displacement funds for the residents, since there are no residents, it saves millions right there. And then the fact that they are some of the properties are already vacant lots has to reduce the price from lots with buildings on them, lots with buildings that are in good condition and occupied. For example, they recently in the last year or so bought the fiveplex at 120 Park Place for around $180,000, and it had rental income, so now it's empty. So how can it be a whole lot more than that without rental income?
Let's let Roxanne jump in here. You may not be able to hear her too clearly. I may have to repeat what she says, but go ahead, Roxanne.
Well, one thing I just want to say is, you know, the city council to me is another bully pulpit sort of thing. And the thing that strikes me is when you eminent domain, you have to pay fair market value to whoever's property you eminent domain. And so one of the reasons they don't want to eminent domain Charlie is that he is rich enough to tie them up in court for years, should he choose not to sell. So they're picking on a smaller, lesser wealthy landlord, as they did in the previous beach project, because they know that they can outlast them in terms of lawyers' expenses and stuff, even if they were unwilling to sell. So it's sort of a bully thing going on, too, is to pick on the small guy who can't fight back. And
thank you, Roxanne. I heard that. And I'd like to comment on that the use of eminent, the way eminent domain works, the power of eminent domain, is that the redevelopment agency would own the property at the receipt of the mailed notice to the present owner. For instance, if the and they set their own price, what they have a assessor come in, they name a price, and then they give the owner, in this case it would be Seaside Company, that much money. Now, if Seaside wanted more money than that, they could later take them to court. But in the preceding time, the city, that is the redevelopment agency, would own that property.
So the project could proceed.
Yes,
exactly. Again, the name of the project is
Rex Court.
May I
take a moment of your listeners' time to quickly run through the concept of Rex Court?
Sure, go ahead.
Olinta is the original Ohlone name for beach flats, and it means the place of the red abalone. And Olinta, that is beach flats, was the first, the original Indian village, Native American Indian village in this area. Olinta is the proposed nonprofit association. So we're using the historic name Olinta. Olinta is the proposed nonprofit association of homeowners and renters and co-op apartment owners, with money seeded by the City of Santa Cruz and in cooperation with the Bridge Low Income Housing Developer, Housing for Humanity, County Housing Authority.
Habitat for Humanity?
Yes, in order to develop and manage these 120 new additional houses and apartments that are bought back from Seaside Company in the beach flats for beach flats housing. And the whole neighborhood would be renamed Olinta, and Olinta would include a recreated Ohlone encampment.
Mm.
And the first project of this Olinta would be Rex Court. And other buybacks, in addition to Walker Court at 120 Park Place, that has an approximate, which is 5 apartments in good condition, an approximate price of $180,000. Other buybacks would be a Rex Villa at 131 to 133 La Brant, 14 apartments, 73rd Street, a fourplex, and then we get into the site of Lindy Court, which is still zoned for 20 apartments.
So you're talking about a really significant increase in housing in Santa Cruz by taking back from Charlie Canfield the property that he has evicted people from and is sort of sitting on speculatively.
That's correct.
And now this seems to me to be just the kind of project that these new 3 city council members, concerned about, you know, simply a commercial development for the beach boardwalk that displaces poor people and doesn't really give affordable housing, this would be just the kind of project that they'd be interested in, wouldn't you think?
One would think, because there are 30 plus, over 30 vacant lots near 3rd and Beach Street, where some houses were emptied and demolished by Seaside Company, and there are also more than 30 emptied houses and apartments there.
But Roxanne, do you think that, I mean, you've been observing Councilmember Fitzmaurice, Sugar, and Crone at some of these meetings. Are they in favor of this? I admit your project is new, Jane, and so it hasn't been presented to them per se, but what's your feeling about this? Oh, it has been presented.
Ask Jane, has it been presented at City Council?
Has the project been presented at City Council, Jane?
It has, yeah, the idea has been floated to the mayor with a request to have the budget department look into the purchase of the Walker Court and Rex Villa as the start point. And each of the City Council members have gotten brochures.
Good job.
Describing the project. But, you know, we have been interested in stopping the commercial speculation by Seaside Company and Beachfront Residential Neighborhood for a long time and recovering the historic footprint of the houses of families who still live around Santa Cruz and miss, you know, have wonderful stories from those areas. But we were somewhat slow in putting forth our
Well, what does the City Council say about this? I mean,
they think that we're only responding to the Dolphin League because, in a way, it is a response to the Dolphin League because it's the opposite attitude. While the Dolphin League would displace Beach Flats residents and not provide any more housing than it's and do nothing about the seaside speculation.
Well, Jane, whether you're responding to Dolphin Lee or not, one would think that a proposal for increased housing stock with less...
Right, it's still a great idea.
It sounds like the kind of thing that they would respond to. What has the response been? Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's work on it together. Or have they been giving you a different response?
Well, you have to appreciate that there is an old school or...
Old guard
of staff members and folks.
Why is it that the new guard looks just like the old guard?
For instance, Mercy Housing Project, Elizabeth Vogel are paid $60,000 a year to be the housing experts for Santa Cruz. Well, they don't do rehab and they don't do a lot of types of mixed use, and they never have had a history of confronting an organization of the magnitude of what the boardwalk is in Santa Cruz. Of course, it's a company town, and so many people are hicks and kowtow to that general philosophy.
Jane, Roxanne has something she wants to reply to that.
Yes.
Well, the one thing that I want to say about the new City Council is I feel that they are frightened of the activists. I felt that in the beginning they were frightened about being too friendly towards the activists that really elected them, because they were afraid of a recall vote. People were furious when they got in. However, they bent over backwards, or maybe forwards, I'm not sure, to make this, to show no preference to the people that elected them. And as a result, really, the things that they supposedly stood for, they're not standing up for. I feel that Phil and Jane have come up with a really excellent idea, but they're, in some ways, because of their activism, and I mean it's real activism, they also scare the City Council to be lumped in with them or as, you know, have them as their fans. I felt that from the people that we worked so hard to elect. Jane may disagree with me, but I think they're actually afraid of brilliance. I think that they're much more comfortable with mediocrity, with making decisions that don't, you know, put them out in left field, that don't make them, and all the beliefs and stuff that they profess to us, they're going to have to put them on the line soon, because I know that the people of the beach flats are not going to tolerate another beach plan that has a project like this in it. We don't want it, and they're not doing us any favor.
Thank you, Roxanne, and I would agree, and I'd also like to extend that fear of association to the Gutierrez family, who is the 23-year a resident of Beach Flats and in the Dolphin, where they have an apartment, and they raised their kid. They were born, the mom and dad. Maria Gutierrez is the 50-something-year-old woman that is born and raised in Mexico and is now applying for U.S. citizenship and a very strong leader of her community. And she's outspoken, and she sticks up for her folks, and they are one family, and she has been so disrespected that it has crossed the line into racism, and I am just disgusted. I'd like to read a letter, if I might, by Maria Gutierrez. It states, the members of Beachfront Neighborhood Association are deeply disappointed that with the Dolphin League project, it still seems to be moving forward, despite expressed and near unanimous objections raised by Beachfront residents. It's our understanding that this plan is being pushed primarily by two people, one a professional political aide with close ties to the boardwalk, and the other an employee of the would-be developer.
You're talking about Andy Schifrin, right?
Andy Schifrin and Elizabeth Vogel.
Gotcha.
It is our fear that one underlying objective of this plan is the forced removal of many of the people who just last year voiced public objections to a similar plan and the expansion of the amusement park. We disapprove of the means in which this plan is being promoted outside the appropriate public process. For example, the plan was not listed on the agenda of the meeting of the SCAN, and what that then recommended it, and it is our understanding that there may not have been a quorum. To our knowledge, there's been no general membership approval of the enclosed SCAN recommendations regarding the development of the Dolphin League property.
Now, wait a minute. Skip Spitzer assures us that would never happen. SCAN has not recommended this.
And yet there's
a document which has
a
recommendation. But it's only a draft recommendation.
Uh-huh. The SCAN recommendations are based on excerpts from a report on housing conditions at one of the two properties. Failure to identify the would-be developer as the party that hired the inspector, which information would have suggested that the inspector was hired by the developer for the purpose of justifying demolition, is a serious withholding of pertinent information, and also the fact that the city building code inspector has recently gone through the property and feels that it is in okay condition. The developer's apparent failure to report the alleged conditions to the city at the time suggests concerns other than the well-being of the residents. Beneath these questionable promotional efforts is the plan itself. The attorney, Jonathan Wentworth's document on behalf of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, submits that there are numerous legal and ethical issues raised that all apply to the Dolphin League. In fact, in addition to the objections raised by Mr. Wentworth, the Dolphin League proposal raises additional issues. The current plan would force the removal of nearly 200 residents. These residents are in the 20% of the area median income. There's no chance that these people would get the replacement housing. Cruelly ironic, the plan would result in economic cleansing. The residents of the Dolphin League properties are a tight-knit, hard-working, law-abiding family. They say, we are family, and they mean it. The rent subsidy on the scattered housing that they would find would never reestablish the community they have. Beachfront residents and the people of the city will not allow their community to be destroyed for the purpose of silencing political opposition for any purpose. The proposed project would not be affordable or even available to the community that would be shattered by it. The findings of substandard housing conditions are suspect, coming as they do from the would-be developer and not confirmed by any independent source. There's been no attempt to identify alternatives that would not require the forced removal of residents, would result in net increase in the number of housing units that Dolphin League would destroy as many as it would build, would help reestablish the original footprint of the neighborhood and address the underlying problem of commercial speculation. Beachfront Neighborhood Association regrets this new plan, but nonetheless is prepared to resist it by all means necessary. This plan enjoys no support amongst Beachfront residents. More than 200 have written or publicly expressed their opposition. Beachfront Neighborhood Association finds this to be a cruel, suspiciously conceived plan being pushed in ways that are both undemocratic and unfair. We will sit in front of the bulldozers if necessary to stop this plan. Thank you in advance for joining us in this struggle, Maria Gutierrez.
Wow.
And I'd also, on that, the note of the no support from Beachfront residents, I'd like to underline that with the 166 signed letters from Dolphin and Lee Properties present residents stating that they do not want to move and are against the project. And I think that anybody trying to push that off as insignificant is just calling people liars.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been such degradation of the...
But I think equally important what you're talking about here is you have proposed an alternative that could actually provide more housing more cheaply. And that, I think, is something that I'm encouraging you to... Are you going to be bringing this up at the next City Council Oral Communications 7 o'clock
yes,
on Tuesday?
Yes, sure will.
That's great.
And I hope people will drive, if you're not real, people listening on the radio, if you're not real familiar with the area, drive straight down Riverside Avenue towards the boardwalk and turn left on Beach Street. And there, where Beach turns left to 3rd, look back at the corner of Beach and 3rd, and you'll see a bunch of vacant land. All that land was houses. And all that land could be houses. And that's where we want to start our rebuilding.
It was torn down by Canfield in speculation.
Okay.
Well, I think that's very important, and I want to thank you. We've been talking to Jane Baer, and we're gonna take a musical break here before we launch into a second subject. But I'm sorry you can't catch our radio there, Jane. Maybe I don't know what to suggest. Maybe you can come on down to the studio here and join us. You and Phil are always welcome here, you know.
Well, thanks a lot, and thanks for talking about it.
And bring Chris Crone with you.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Before we go to a musical break, Robert, because I only have a few minutes left, I did want to say some things about identifying opportunity sites. It's one of my big problems with these projects. One of the things that happens with the City Council, all members, is they get their information from staff members. Staff members who have...
Opportunity sites, can you clarify that?
Well, the opportunity sites for there to be a project on, or low-cost housing built on, low-income housing... that has been identified by city staff in Mercy Housing. So it's very interesting with all of the land that is sitting either unoccupied, vacant, or even with no buildings on it in the beach flats, that Mercy Housing felt Dolphin Lee was the apartment, were the apartment buildings to actually demolish.
You just have an affair with Dolphin Lee. There's sort of an emotional relationship there.
And so the thing that strikes me, I was driving by a real... I talked to Martine, who is a person who works in the city, and I said, how was it that this was identified as the best place in the whole beach flats to build a place when there's so many empty places? And he said, well, we have nothing to do with that. Staff does it. And when I asked him about staff, he said, Eileen Fogarty, Mercy Housing... These are people that have definite agendas, and they definitely do not like even their own, in Mercy Housing, their own Latinos who are on staff. During the beach area time when we were defeating the plan, they were so rude to their own people. As soon as people, they saw people were against the project that they wanted down there with realignment, they treated them terribly, and they spoke to them horribly, and they wouldn't call on them. So it's just... I was driving by, I said, well, why don't you put advertisements in the paper saying that the city needs land for low-income housing within city limits so they get the money for it? And why isn't there some widespread people who want to sell? Since eminent domain means paying fair market value, there might be a better chance of even buying below fair market value, you know, if people are wanting to sell. And he really had no answer for that, but... As I was going by a real estate office the other day, I saw that Habitat for Humanity has large posters in real estate offices saying that they want land, that they need land to build on. We were told by the current city council that Habitat for Humanity has no interest in building in this area. I'm going to submit that I don't believe that's true. They're building in Live Oak right now. They have posters in our real estate offices here in the city, you know, why wouldn't they be interested if somebody had land? And I don't know what their rate of pay is, but I would assume a city could pay better than Habitat for Humanity for land to build projects on. So why not people who are willing? I don't understand this obsession with locating an affordable housing project in the beach flats, claiming it's the last place they can do it, the only place they can do it, and then of taking land from people who bought it fair and square, and eminent domaining it.
So one would wonder, along these lines, has a cost-benefit analysis been done? This was a question, I think, raised by Keith Sugar at the last election around the boardwalk.
The land is worth a lot, that's right.
I mean, why not compare the different parcels, how much it would cost to build in each parcel, how much it would cost to purchase it, and then do a kind of a comparative study? And one would think that would be the necessary precursor to any such deal, whereas in fact what's happening, you have a completely finished plan, the Dolphin Lee plan, being pushed, it looks like, by Andy Schifrin. At least that was my impression at the last housing housing committee meeting.
Oh, Andy, you dirty dog. He pretended all along to be a friend of the Beach Flats people during the last big struggle over this. And, oh, I ain't Andy Schifrin. I don't know. That name does not sit well with me.
And Don Lane was also at the meeting. I'm not sure what his purpose in this is. I asked him if he had a financial interest, and he said something like, "That's a very good question," and walked off.
It's another dirty deal. It's another dirty city deal. And I tell you, if our guys go along with this, who I'm really so out of love with anyway.
Our guys, of course. By that you mean your guys, and you're talking about Crone,
Fitz
Sugar,
Morris,
Fitz
Crone
Morris.
And Sugar. And I think you probably voted for them yourself, as you know.
Well, that may be, but that doesn't mean that they're my guys, for heaven's sake.
Well, now they've fallen. Definitely, nobody's claiming that they're their guys anymore. But I'm telling you, if they go along with it, I'll support any recall vote anybody wants to start. They were afraid of recall in the beginning, since we were the ones that got them elected. Of course, they probably have a lot of votes now on the other side, you know. They're pleasing a lot of people who didn't vote for them, so.
It's a sad situation, and of course, I mean, you and I initially did a lot of talk after the election about the problem of the sleeping ban and emergency shelter. I mean, you were concerned that in the middle of winter, we couldn't hear a peep out of Fitz Morris, Crone, or Sugar about the need to open up a campground or open up a building where people could have shelter.
That's right. And, you know, unfortunately, we are hearing peeps out of them now. And or maybe it's fortunate because they're showing their true colors. But the peeps I'm hearing, recently, Maria Gutierrez, who is the manager of the Dolphin Lee, confronted at a neighborhood meeting Tim Fitzmaurice on him coming into people's property where there are signs that say no trespassing. She said to him that she had gotten permission from the district attorney. You have to have permission to have a no trespassing sign, I guess, on your property that's legal with an ordinance number on it. And due to many problems that they've had in their neighborhood with people coming door to door, she had gotten that through. And she said, "You came into our property without any permission, started going door to door, wanting to see people's houses, scaring people." Do you know what his response to her was? "So tell the district attorney on me." I mean, he has no respect for people's rights down there. He was asked at the meeting, I asked the question of him, that if a bunch of Latinos came into his neighborhood and started going door to door and asking to see his house or whatever, A, would he want his wife to answer the door to strangers, you know, when she's home alone? And B, do you think we'd get to more than one or two houses before the police would come and stop us? And he made a very sarcastic remark that his wife could take care of himself and could answer the door to anyone, obviously avoiding the question. You cannot walk into neighborhoods and just go door to door and start asking to look in people's houses. You would be very suspect. He maintains that he's not a stranger, that people know who he is in the Beach Flats, and therefore they're not afraid of him. It's ridiculous. He's ignoring all the things that they're doing things in exactly the same way that Scott Kennedy and everyone else did them, only now people do not trust the person that wants to talk to them about their problems because they know that it's going to be used against them. And they're much more fearful because their words have been twisted. Scott Kennedy spent 2 years in our neighborhood hitching up his belt over his big belly saying good morning to everybody like he was the burgermeister of the Beach Flats and, "Hey, do you need any help with anything?" and blah, 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 blah. And then look how that was used, that information. You know, you may complain about a stove that doesn't work. It doesn't mean that you would choose to be homeless.
You're talking, of course, about Fitzmaurice's inquiries as to what was wrong and not working in the Dolphin and Lee apartment complex.
Right. Supposedly, when he went through, he found all the stuff that didn't work. Nope. We've all been in and out of those houses, babysat for the children there. We have no knowledge of these horrible things. And, of course, he refused to give numbers, refused to, when we said how many, he wouldn't talk about it. There's one other document I brought. Do you mind if I just finish up this hour? And I brought a document that has recommendations and problems that Elizabeth Vogel put together. And
Elizabeth Vogel, we should say, is sort of the point person for Mercy Housing, which is the monopoly shelter builder? Or what would you call that group?
Catholic ripoff charities builder, yeah. The property ends up in their hands. They don't put any money into it. All the grants come in, it's built, blah, blah, blah. And then, just like Neri Lagoon and all of the other properties that will then be in their hands. They will own it. And there, well, actually, there's two things I want to say. I brought some recommendations that were made by Elizabeth Vogel in 1997 about the beach flats that were just presented again to SCAN, which then they gave their endorsement to a large project in the beach flats without, I mean, this is old information, number one. And it was done without a significant amount of the membership being notified or anything. This was done by a small group of people, this endorsement. I'm not real happy with SCAN. I've talked to them personally and really pleaded with them to understand what's going on, and they seem to be schmoozed by the new council people also. Well, first, these recommendations are... what I wanted to say is almost every large urban area is knocking down its projects one by one. They are too dense, they create a lot of problems with crime, etc. And so while people are rising up in larger cities, we're starting to build tenements. I don't understand that concept at all, where the density, people not being able to get along because they're on top of each other, they want to start that here. And we're not against affordable housing, but recommendations came in from the planning department that even 35 were too many apartments to be together stacked up on each other on these small lots that these people want to build on. The other thing I want to say is there's a long list of complaints about the beach flats. Severe deterioration of walls was observed. The floor of the bathroom was noted to be deteriorated. Structural damage indicated floor, wall, ceiling, excessive structural deterioration, lavatory sink running constantly, standing water in floor of bathroom. There's a whole page and a half of things that she supposedly observed in the beach flats or was told about. When the zoning inspector, Linda Garner, came in and for a year and a half went in and out of buildings, people couldn't stop her because she was the zoning inspector. The landlords couldn't stop her. These kinds of things were not validated. And although there are complaints against some landowners that they needed to fix, it was nothing like the list of the litany of things that you see here or the things that Tim Fitzmaurice is trying to indicate. However, even though this report is from 1997, this is what SCAN, this is what recently...
SCAN pass, or at least one of their committees.
This is, it's a draft, but it's recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
That the existing residents of properties must first be given preference to return to new housing. You can give people preference, it doesn't mean you'll take them. In other words, you will consider their applications first. It does not mean they will get in. This is something SCAN seems not to really get. Everybody can say we gave them preference, but, you know, the new housing must be affordable to a mix of low and very low income households earning less than 60% of the area median income. The new housing must have a mix of apartment sizes, including a substantial number of 3 and 4 bedroom apartments. Residents must be provided relocation benefits as required by federal, state, blah, blah. Relocation of existing residents must be done very sensitively. Well, if you believe that'll happen ever. Mike Rotkin in the last plan stated that he would, you know, personally make sure that every resident, you know, was relocated, and he lived to regret that
and
remark.
And not be abused by the police as well, of course. Mike is big on that.
He lived to regret that remark. We held him to it. They could not produce it. It would have been, had we been pushed out of the beach flats, we would have had to find where we were going to go, you know, and wait for the relocation funds. You don't just get them automatically. People who have been relocated from other towns and stuff can tell you some real horror stories about when the rent's due, but your relocation money for the month hasn't arrived, and how long you really get to keep your new apartment under those circumstances.
Hmm.
And
well, I noticed about that 60% of the median income. Median income in Santa Cruz is pretty high. I would say that less than 60% would include a number of, you know, I mean, what, $50,000 to $70,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would leave out, certainly would leave out homeless people. Would leave probably leave out most very low income people. And again, low income people, I don't know, but it sounds again like a kind of a a misrepresentation, a form of, you know, false advertising to reassure people who are concerned about affordable housing, but that has no substance and no teeth. It's really designed to get this project in place.
What I see is our problem is that we have people who are politically active in this town are also wealthy. They have the time to be so the people that are, I don't know what you want to say, they're not considered radical, they're considered acceptably active, such as SCAN, are also made up of a lot of people who actually are very well-to-do. And that is a problem. I mean, you know, our own mayor, what does she drive, Alicia? Our own mayor drives a Jaguar.
You're talking about sleeping van buyers?
Yeah, you know, I mean, they all have brand new cars, they live in really nice houses, they don't get it. To them, living, you know, on 60% of the median income is like, gosh, that's terrible. But for most people, a lot of people in Santa Cruz live way below that. They live on 20 to 30% of the median income. And I just have two more points on this that they recommended. The new housing must be...
They being SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network.
I'm sorry, SCAN, yes.
That's the group that actually elected the current city council members, and it's sort of been the group that's had them in power, had the city council in power for 20 years. They've had a majority on the city council.
Well, I felt the Green Party and Bernard, a lot of people were really involved in getting these men elected, but the new housing must be built at a density level high enough to ensure that a comparable number of units or bedrooms as presently exists will be replaced to allow the existing residents to be rehoused. What is that saying? What, we knock down 50 units and put up 50 units? Can you tell me how that benefits Santa Cruz, really, when we already are at a housing shortage? We need to increase living units, not knock ones down, no matter what you think of them. They are housing people, and I don't know, do you want them living under the San Lorenzo Bridge? And to the extent